May it please the Court. My name is Robert Condras. I represent Timothy Runyon, the appellant, who is the plaintiff below. Mr. Runyon appeals a judgment as a matter of law entered against him in favor of the defendant AET at the trial level on July 14, 2009. Mr. Runyon filed an age discrimination claim against AET based upon his February 2006 termination. On appeal, Mr. Runyon requests a reversal of that ruling by the trial court and a remand so that his age case may be decided by a jury.
So Mr. Condras, I have a comment and a question for you. The comment is that this court has a lot of cases in which we have pointed out that the McDonnell-Douglas or the other direct versus indirect methods of analysis are tools that are used at the summary judgment stage. And once you get to trial, the real question is, can, in this instance, Mr. Runyon introduce enough evidence at the trial to get to a jury on the question whether there was age discrimination? So we don't really need to worry about four-part tests for McDonnell-Douglas or all the rest of it at this stage of the game. And my question for you is, I just don't see what evidence you had put in that would allow a rational jury to find that age was the reason for Mr. Runyon's termination, not any of a number of other things. I mean, the jury can't sit there and say, well, it could be 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. They need to have something that would allow them rationally to conclude that it was age.
Well, I agree the test can be mechanical and probably wouldn't be explained as such to a jury, but the evaluation by the court with a Rule 50 motion is the same as Rule 56. The reason for the appeal.
Not quite. No, the court is going to look at what evidence was actually introduced at the trial for the Rule 50 motion. And the court is really just supposed to ask the question, could a rational jury find for the plaintiff?
Correct.
It's really not necessary to do all that McDonnell-Douglas stuff and Troop and everything else.
That's correct, but the same rules apply that a court may not make its own credibility determination.
Absolutely.
And leaves that to the jury.
Absolutely.
The basis for the appeal had to do with the specific comment made by the district court judge that while he had ruled in the plaintiff's favor based on, and to answer your question, Judge Wood, the same evidence that was presented in response to a summary judgment motion was, in fact, presented to the jury during the trial. His comment was he believed that the law had changed. The basis for the appeal, it is a simple argument, but it's an important one, and I think that is the reason. Well, that is the reason. That
no, I understand what you're saying as far as that goes, because Gross against FBL Financial is a mixed motive case, whereas it's my understanding that Mr. Runyon was never raising a mixed motive point. But our review, either way, whether it's summary judgment or Rule 50, is de novo. So,
correct.
I would, in my view, the fact that the case that has been brought up to us is whether it was correct to grant the Rule 50 motion. Now, maybe for all I know, the judge should have granted the summary judgment motion as well. But it's really all folded into the Rule 50 motion at this point. But I don't think it helps you that much that the judge earlier had given you the benefit of the doubt on summary judgment.
If I may address the specific facts then, please. I believe that the pretext analysis is really just a different way of presenting circumstantial evidence. And with circumstantial evidence, the goal at trial is to eliminate coincidences. Eliminate coincidence so that the only factor left to allow the jury to infer or to conclude it must have been age that separated the two persons when you're making a comparison.
They hired your client when he was 45, and they fire him when he's 46. So how could age have anything to do with it?
He's hired by a temporary.
No, this is 46. Hey, we don't want 46-year-olds. 45 is okay, but we don't want anybody older than that. It wouldn't make any sense.
He's hired by a temporary service, not directly by AET.
What difference does it make? The fact is they did hire him. They, you know, he becomes a regular employee. And there he is at 45, and apparently they're willing to hire a 45-year-old.
Judge, this is a disparate discipline case, and the question becomes,
no, but
do they
think
prefer
of just
one?
The logic of the sense of it, drawing an inference of age discrimination, when they hire this fellow at this, you know, advanced age, and then let him go a year later.
We have other cases in other types of protected categories where even if the person may have been initially hired, when a certain situation, such as a fight between the two employees, occurs, which is the one do they prefer? And do they prefer one over the other because of age? In this circumstance, we have an issue where the company had a set of rules. It was willing to bend its written rule that it would fire people for retaliatory or violent or fighting behaviors so that it could keep the younger person that it preferred. In Mr. Runyon's case, while he did not fight back during that, he did not physically fight back during that altercation, they made up a rule, an unwritten rule, to claim that they chose to fire him instead of the other combatant.
These two previous incidents.
I don't believe that those were genuine, and I think that, again, was a credibility issue.
Well, that's not quite the question, though. If the company had a record of previous incidents, it's not our job to decide whether the company ought to have made such a record. It's really, did they see Mr. Runyon as somebody who was regularly causing problems?
Judge Wood, if I may, the company claimed that it had a record. Again, a credibility issue. The records that existed for Mr. Runyon in his personnel file actually said that he got the job because he got along so well with his coworkers. He was evaluated one time. He had a 120-day evaluation saying that he gets along well with coworkers. He had never been disciplined for arguing with coworkers before. And when the analysis, these written notes that weren't verbal warnings on the four-step progressive system, did they really exist? Questions were asked of Mr. Hamilton.
An incident with a woman who was crying and so that didn't
Luz
happen?
Reyes?
I'm not saying that there wasn't an argument before. I'm saying that it wasn't something that the decision makers cared about to discipline Mr. Runyon or Ms. Reyes. And what happened?
Well, I don't understand that. I mean, they might not think discipline was necessary the first time or the second time, the third time. Then they're beginning to worry.
I understand, and that's why we again compared to Mr. Corbin. The other issue in terms of different treatment, if the company in situations not important enough to the bosses to make a note and put it in the personnel file or discipline somebody, they were doing that with the older worker. We had examples of the younger worker. I gave you the February 7, 2006, 120-day evaluation of Mr. Corbett, the 30-year-old man. It was saying that he had had a dispute with a coworker. We asked, where's the handwritten note if that was your practice? Didn't exist. And then the issue, the evidentiary issue that I've raised, which I think is a different standard, during the time period that covered the fight that he had, there was a comment made that he frequently fails to get along with coworkers. We asked in discovery, where are the handwritten notes? Who were the coworkers that he did not get along with? No similar notes that they were keeping about Mr. Runyon existed, and in that circumstance, we were attempting to use that evaluation to rebut, whether you call it rebuttal or impeachment evidence, the claim, and yeah, it is the pretext analysis, but the claim that, well, we had an unwritten rule three times and you're out. Well, we had Mr. Corbett, his February 7th dispute mentioned in that evaluation, his fight with Mr. Runyon himself.
Well, that was the major thing that they're talking about, obviously.
And I think there, I understand with the motion in limine, if the court did not wish for Mr. Runyon to raise that September 12, 2006 evaluation of Mr. Corbett in his case in chief, Mr. Runyon made the point, if AET claims that Mr. Runyon was fired under this three-strike rule, may we use that evidence then to rebut? It greatly prejudices Mr. Runyon if the company is allowed to say, we claim we have a legitimate reason for firing Mr. Runyon. It's the three-strike rule. He has this evidence over here to say, if what you're saying is true and you have that rule, and I quoted a portion of Mr. Hamilton's testimony in my reply brief, then
right,
this evidence showing that you didn't treat Mr. Corbett that same way, you didn't apply this unwritten rule to Mr. Corbett
that
same way.
So it sounds to me like your whole case turns on whether what you see as disparate treatment between Mr. Runyon and Mr. Corbett can have one and only one explanation, and that is that the company was discriminating on the basis of Mr. Runyon's greater age. Because I don't hear anything else about reasons why they're, other reasons, other treatment of other workers, policies of the company, anything else that would lead you to think age was the explanation. So really, this is a case about Corbett versus Runyon.
Not almost completely, yes, but I did discuss the direct method and a few highlights, the fact that Mr. Corbett was favored in the hiring process. He did not, to show that age
Why
is the...
Why is that favoring? I know you seem to think that whether you go through Kelly Services or not is some extra hoop, but I have trouble seeing that as anything but a fairly neutral fact.
Mr. Runyon had to prove himself, and there was a Ms. Brucken and a Mr. Ellis that had to write notes to the upper management saying, please let this person have a... He had applied for the job on February 24th. Of 05 and wasn't hired until June 8th.
Corbett
was hired off the bat without having to prove himself through some kind of a temporary arrangement as the older worker had.
I don't see how that tells you that, well, anyway.
And the paper trails were kept in different ways, and I think the direct method to me is a complementary way of adding to the indirect method, or in saying, let's eliminate every coincidence. Even if the indirect method works, do we have other examples where these two people, the older and the younger, had to be treated in some same context by the management? Does the inference of age discrimination get turned on its head in these other examples, and in this case, other than the fight? Yes.
What was Corbett's age?
Mr. Corbett was 30. Mr. Runyon was 46 at the time of their altercation. If I may, there is, again, the abuse of discretion. The reason for the request that there be an evidentiary ruling, if, in fact, Mr. Runyon is successful and convinces the court that there has not been a change in the law and that he had, in fact, put forward all of the necessary evidence of pretext and this prima facie evidence of age discrimination so that the decision could be made by a jury, he still has to try that case. And he would ask, again, under a simple argument, but he did have rebuttal evidence. The one argument that AET made that Mr. Runyon, based on what he presented to the jury, was not able to effectively combat was this issue of if you have three arguments with a coworker, we're going to fire you, even though we don't have a written rule on this issue. Mr. Runyon did, in fact, have evidence that Mr. Corbett, during this same period of time, frequently failed to get along with coworkers when he asked who were the coworkers, where were the notes. But if you'll please look, the people that signed that September 12, 2006 evaluation for Mr. Corbett were Mr. Hamilton, the person that AET says is the decision maker, and Rod Ellis, the first-line supervisor. They had the same. If those folks had an unwritten rule, they applied it differently. It was more severe toward the older worker than it was the younger worker. I think the Foss versus Sears Roebuck case remains law.
That assumes that Corbett's difficulties in getting along with people, what have you, were exactly
right.
The same as Runyon's. So there's this note from Ellis who said Corbett has had some small issues with another employee, but that has improved. Is that false?
I think that assumes that you attach credibility to the fourth in a series of four explanations given by AET when asked the question, in this fight between the younger man and the older man, why did you fire the older man and not the younger? The first claim was he was told at the time of the firing, you just don't fit in.
I didn't think these four explanations were inconsistent so much as elaborations of reasons. Not fitting in is a very broad statement.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
I thought they were developed over time once the litigation began, actually, because, in fact, the only written record that was created before the lawsuit said that Mr. Runyon was fired for creating a hostile environment, which is the exact same reason that AET in its record said he was given a final warning and a 3-day suspension, and is exactly the explanation that AET said for the younger man, Mr. Corbett, it warranted a 3-day suspension. There was a third argument made along the way that he wasn't contrite enough with his apology letter. And
his apology letter is actually quite different, though, from Mr.
Yes.
Corbett's.
I did not think so. I think they both said that they were very... I think they loved their job and wanted...
Corbett apologized for his conduct. Runyon did not.
I don't think we had any evidence that any of the readers...
No, they're two letters. They're different.
I understand that certain interpretations, but
that's
with...
That's not an interpretation. Corbett says he's sorry now for what he did. Runyon says he's sorry about the incident, but he doesn't. He does not take any responsibility for the incident. That's a difference.
I think that he said that he would strive to make sure that he never failed to get along with coworkers again. He ended his letter saying that.
That's correct.
And for lack of a better term, I don't mean to do this. Whether Mr. Runyon thought he did anything wrong or not, Mr. Runyon accepted the instruction of his superiors and wrote what some could consider to be a groveling letter. I love this company, want to retire from here. I am sorry.
No, we have the letter.
Now, apparently Runyon said once that he was ready, this is colorful, ready to take off a coworker's head and wait for the county. What exactly does wait for the county mean? Wait for the sheriff?
If he got in trouble, I suppose. There was that comment, but again, that was a circumstance where Mr. Hamilton...
The question is, did Corbett ever say anything like that?
We don't know because they didn't keep records of his arguments with his coworkers that weren't important enough to ADT to actually give him a verbal or a written warning or a suspension or to fire him under their progressive system.
There's no evidence that Corbett ever engaged in conduct similar to Runyon's.
No, but there is evidence that Mr. Woolman, the person who is the other participant in that argument, who is that much more younger than Mr. Runyon, than Mr. Corbett, didn't have any less than verbal warning note placed in his personnel file because of this argument between the two men. Again,
but the burden of proof was on you. I mean, if there wasn't evidence, you at least would have needed to develop some kind of record that Corbett was saying things of comparable offensiveness or driving coworkers to tears or threatening to pull their heads off or whatever.
I don't think that the fact that Mr. Corbett said things was important. I think the
Apparently, to the company it was. I mean, that's the problem.
But that's the issue, Judge Wood. I think the fact that the company knew that he had arguments. If he had arguments that his bosses didn't know about, that probably doesn't matter. We have to look at the motivation of the decision maker, and we have three different records of at least three different coworker disputes for Mr. Corbett. Why didn't they develop a record of the argument for Mr. Corbett as they did for Mr. Runyon? Again, disparate treatment.
There are threats, and those are different.
And if there had been a threat, there was actually a written policy, and there may have been discipline, but in this case, what I'm telling you is there had not only not been any discipline to Mr. Runyon for arguments,
there was a threat by Runyon about this taking off a coworker's head. There's no evidence of anything comparable by Corbett. That's the problem with your case.
I note that my time has ended. If I may answer, please.
Well, of course. Why would I ask you a question and not let you answer, right?
Judge, again, I don't think you have a circumstance where there was any development of what Mr. Corbett did. You only have a note that he had these problems, and I think when you look at Mr. Runyon in terms of before the decision to fire him, what was AET saying about him, his evaluation from Mr. Hamilton, into whose mouth these words are being placed at trial, said he gets along well with coworkers and says he never complains when asked to do something. And that was in the cooperation section of that one evaluation of Tim Runyon before that fight.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Condris. Ms. Wilson?
Good morning. May it please the Court. The district court appropriately granted AET's motion for judgment as a matter of law because no reasonable juror could find that Mr. Runyon's age was the determinative factor in AET's decision to terminate him.
Now, wouldn't you agree that Gross really has nothing to do with this, though? Mr. Runyon never argued this was a mixed motive case.
Your Honor, we would say that Gross does apply to this case.
Well,
and
yes. That's not the question.
That's not the question. I mean, you know, no one's ignoring Gross, but when the Supreme Court issues a decision about a different problem, I mean, the question is, what's the intersection? And I just don't see that there's ever been any debate here that Mr. Runyon has assumed the responsibility to prove disparate treatment on the basis of age. No one has ever offered any other reason for, you know, it's not like, you know, we think he's, you know, age entered into a firing for absenteeism or whatever. This is just, was it age or was it something else? And so, and Gross doesn't tell you. Gross just says age has to be the but-for, you know, even in a mixed motive case. But if you weren't in a mixed motive case to begin with, why is Gross important?
Well, Your Honor, I'm taking the specific language from the Gross case. It's in that case, the court said, hence the burden of persuasion necessary to establish employer liability is the same in alleged mixed motive cases as it is in any other ADEA disparate treatment
right.
action.
Right, and so, but that just takes you back to the other cases. You didn't need Gross. I mean, you were already there since this wasn't a mixed motive case.
We would agree. We would agree, and of course, it's our position that Judge McKinney should have granted our summary judgment because we believe that Mr. Runyon had to prove that his age was the but-for reason for his termination.
So and why was there such poor documentation of Corbett's problems? He does seem to be a difficult employee.
Your Honor, there was no evidence presented by Mr. Runyon at trial that Mr. Corbett didn't get along with other employees. Mr. Runyon testified at trial. We also had Mr. Corbett's testimony. We also had the testimony of Mr. Donnie Hamilton, and we had the testimony of Brian
Jackson. I
understand
what you're saying. Corbett did have difficulty with other employees.
The evidence that was presented to the jury was that the only problems that Corbett had were with Mr. Runyon. There was no other documentation or no other evidence by any of the other witnesses that could corroborate any other coworkers that Mr. Corbett had issues with.
You say Troy has had some small issues with another employee, but that has improved. That's a reference to Runyon?
Yes.
How could that be?
Donnie Hamilton, who is
because
the...
Because Runyon had been left, was fired right after that. I don't understand.
The evaluation...
How could that be a small issue? They had a fight. I don't understand that.
The evaluation that Donnie Hamilton was referring to was the one before the altercation between Mr. Runyon and Mr. Corbett. That was the February 6th evaluation.
And well, they had a big issue after that.
Yes, they did. And what Mr. Hamilton testified to was what he meant in that evaluation dealt with Corbett. Or, I'm sorry, dealt with Corbett and Runyon.
Say when you say Corbett never had problems with other workers, he had problems with Runyon.
He did have problems with Runyon. Absolutely.
Well,
I'm talking.
That serious.
It did not get to the point until the altercation
that's
that happened.
Right.
Yes, they did. They did, Your Honor.
So why is that serious?
It is serious, and the company took it very seriously. In fact, they had two meetings.
So you're saying to discuss. There's no evidence that Corbett ever had any problems with any other workers. Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
But why doesn't that mean that it was error not to let this September 12, 2006 evaluation in? Because you're being very careful here, and you're saying the evidence before the jury, but the time period covered by the September 12 evaluation is a very small overlap with Runyon's tenure, and there Corbett gets 3 out of 10, and two things are said: frequently fails to get along with other employees, plural, and then had a major issue with another employee, singular, early in the year, has made major improvements since that incident. So it seems to me the jury could have been left with a very misleading impression if you were careful to keep out evidence that Corbett was in fact having problems with more than one person.
When
Mr. Runyon isn't a plural.
Yes. The judge allowed Mr. Runyon to testify and also looked at all of the other testimony that was presented.
But Mr. Runyon is not competent to talk about every detail of Mr. Corbett's life. Mr. Runyon can only talk about things that he has had encounters with. And this other evidence, the evaluation, was external evidence about how Mr. Corbett was getting along in the workplace.
I guess two points to that, Your Honor. One is that evaluation was written by a completely different supervisor.
No, in the same chain, though.
And that was by Mr. Ellis.
Right, the same chain, exactly.
And the other point is that the evaluation only references failing to get along. And that is different than Runyon's conduct, where he was involved in profanity, yelling, confronting
people.
Seems
like a very weak basis for excluding the evidence, though.
The evaluation was also done 7 months after the Mr. Runyon's termination.
Argument,
yes,
you should lead with that.
Yes,
one, it seems to me
that was one of the bases for the motion in limine.
But so on the other hand, they had worked there for such a short period of time that looking at this evaluation would place the Luz Reyes incident into perhaps a different context, and perhaps the Willman incident as well. Because certainly Mr. Runyon had been involved in less than open fighting, and in fact, Mr. Runyon seems to have done essentially the right thing when Corbett assaults him in this juvenile way, you know, lifts him up off the ground and twists his front. Seems so. And Mr. Runyon just walks away. He doesn't deck him out. He doesn't do anything else.
There was testimony about what happened prior to that, and I'm certainly not here trying to defend Mr. Corbett's actions and how he responded to that. But there was a pattern that the company saw with Mr. Runyon antagonizing, initiating, causing problems in the workplace. And as we argued at the trial, AET may have been wrong in its decision not to fire Mr. Corbett along with Mr. Runyon, but that doesn't mean it had to do with his age.
So the question that I get back to is the first one I asked Mr. Condris. The jury is normally entitled to choose between two equally, well, you know, if the jury believes a certain account, like they were keeping a very sharp eye on Mr. Runyon and documenting everything and doing all sorts of things and treating Mr. Corbett with a very light hand, what other than age distinguishes these two people?
Well, the jury heard all of the evidence, and Mr.
But it wasn't permitted to decide.
That is correct.
And so you can't count on the fact that the jury heard it. If we were here after a jury verdict, we probably wouldn't even be here.
Right.
Why did the judge not let the jury decide the case? What sense does that make?
Because if
case in chief took 2 days. So the defendant's case probably would have taken 1 day. So why not let the jury decide? And then, of course, the judge could still issue, you know, grant judgment notwithstanding the verdict. But it seems like poor case management to do that, right?
I would suggest, Your Honor, that the judge heard enough evidence to believe that no reasonable juror could find that age was the but-for reason of his termination.
That's the formal basis for a Rule 50 motion, but just this seemed like good case management, since if the jury had agreed with the judge, so to speak, that it wouldn't be an appeal, probably.
Well, that's right. It's a pragmatic point. Just go ahead and let the jury decide. If you think the jury's wrong, there's 50B. You'd renew your motion for judgment as a matter of law, and you would presumably the judge would still have the same view. And yet, if we thought the judge was wrong in that instance, there'd be a jury verdict instead of a whole new set of proceedings.
Did your Rule 50 motion mention Gross?
Yes, it did.
Well,
yes, it did.
Okay.
It did, and a lot of other things.
That was a mistake.
Including the fact that, as Your Honor pointed out, we hired Mr. Runyon at age 45. We fired him 8 months later at 46. He was hired by a team of AET employees, four of whom were over 50. There were two meetings that took place prior to the termination. There were four AET employees involved in those meetings to decide how to handle this situation. All of those individuals were over 40, with the exception of one.
Oh, I'm sure the jury would have rendered a verdict for your client.
And critically, Donnie Hamilton, who was the person that kind of led the charge both in the hiring and the firing, was 51 years old. And he specifically testified that age was never discussed in any of these meetings, and that he would have been offended personally if that had been the case.
We've discussed this in cases before. The fact that someone who fires an older person is himself old, that really doesn't amount to anything. That's no evidence of anything, right?
I would.
Well, old people like to think they're really young. No, it's very bad. It's just not logical, right? The people running these companies are old people. But nevertheless, they may want to have... Look, there are lots of reasons why, many of them illegal, why companies want to have young workers, right? They want to have young workers. Young workers are less interested in unions. They have lower expectations about wages. So you pay them less. So there are plenty of reasons for discrimination against young workers. And those reasons are just as salient for a manager who's an older person as for a young manager.
But there was
Your defendants keep making this argument, oh, he's fired by an old person. It's not true. It doesn't have any actual weight. Maybe it impresses a jury, but it's a bad argument.
That was one piece of evidence as to...
It's bad. It's worthless.
How large?
Yeah.
They have facilities in Terre Haute, Indiana, and I believe that they're just under 500 employees.
Okay, but they're not run. It's a big enough company. It's not run by a 30-year-old, right?
No. That would be correct. I mean,
so you're not going to find any age discrimination. You're not going to find age discriminations in which, 30-year-olds make the discharge decision.
That is correct. That had the ultimate decision. Yes, that is.
So since the person who authorized the discharge is always going to be old, your argument has absolutely no weight.
Well, our point in making that, bringing that out at trial, was to show that this was not just one person making.
But there was no way in which any of these people were going to be fired by kids.
That is correct. I see that
okay.
My time is up.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Wilson. So, Mr. Condras, your time expired. If you want another minute, you can have it, if you have anything further.
Thank you. In rebuttal, I do wish to point out one issue about the record that was raised about Mr. Corbett's 2-7 evaluation. There certainly was not an undisputed fact about whether or not Mr. Runyon was the subject of that first dispute. If it had been, Mr. Runyon would have had four different disputes, not three, if he had had two different fights with Mr. Corbett, of Ms. Les Reyes and Ms. Williams. Mr. Runyon testified that he'd never had a problem with Mr. Corbett before the fight. The other issue, though, in terms of the records that existed and didn't, I pointed out in the statement of fact, the fight did not occur in a vacuum. The night before, an employee had reported Mr. Corbett to other coworkers for not working. They had gotten an email reprimand the next day that Mr. Corbett had in his hand while he was screaming at Mr. Runyon leading up to this fight. Again, in addition to the fact that where are the notes to tell us who were the other people Mr. Corbett fought with, we asked in discovery, where is this email that Mr. Corbett received? And that, too, was never produced, although it was admitted to have existed. This has been a problem through the case, and we were able to point that out at trial.
What was the relative size of these two people?
Mr. Corbett said he was 240 pounds. Mr. Runyon said he was 160 pounds.
And is Corbett taller?
A little bit.
This business of picking someone up under his arm seems very strange.
It was actually worse than that.
I had that as a form of combat. I'm puzzled by that.
The bigger man twisted the chest of the younger man and
that
then
part.
Lifted
that,
him
that
up.
That part I understand, but I understand lifting someone up by his arm so that he sort of dangles in the air.
Both were adults, and it shouldn't happen. Agree.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both.
Thank you. Friends.